This evening, my wife asked me what I was going to speak about in the talk. And I said I was going to talk about silence. And she thought that was pretty funny. Silence is one of the qualities that I've come to very deeply appreciate over the course of my meditation life, Buddhist practice life. And I spent a lot of time in silence, a variety of types of silence, but meditative silence. I spent long periods of time where, months and months on end, where I didn't talk to anybody really, except maybe a meditation teacher, a few minutes each day. But long periods of silence. And they were some of the richest and most valuable times of my life. Can you hear okay? Yeah, so the most valuable times of my life. And silence is not so far from me. I feel like it's always something close by. And coming here to sit with you tonight, it felt also like a refuge to come here and enter into the silence with you and sit. And I really cherished the quiet time here and the variety of silences that I touched into being here. There's a tale of a Zen monk who had spent many years happily in the monastery. And someone asked him, "What brought you to the monastery?" And he said, "Oh, before I was a monk, I was a lay person in the world. I noticed at some point that I lost my silence. And so I had to find it again. So I came to the monastery." So the idea of finding your silence is something that's precious. I think that it's possible to write a dictionary with all the different meanings of silence, all the different ways in which people can interpret it or receive it or express it or use it. And, you know, there's a silence that comes of shaming someone or disapproving someone or being, you know, critical. Or there's a silence of embarrassment. There's a silencing of people. A lot of people get silenced. They're not allowed to speak or not given permission to speak. They don't seem like they count. So the topic of silence can be very painful. But also, I think that silence can be very beautiful, bring a lot of joy, a lot of depth to life. Perhaps one of the first times in my life where I felt something really profound about silence that I can remember was when I was 18 and I went to visit, I was traveling around France and I went to visit Mont Saint-Michel. And it's a Catholic monastery that's built on this kind of an island off the north coast of France. And it's just kind of on top of this little mountain, mound. It's a big towering kind of Disneyland kind of castle kind of monastery. And I went for, when they have this tour, they take you around. And part of the tour, they take you to the oldest part of the monastery, which was a chapel that was originally built on top of the mound there, the hill. And I guess before there was all this kind of grand monastery built around it, just a very simple stone chapel. And everything, the whole monastery is built around that. It's built out and out and out on top of it. And we went into this, the oldest part of the building on top of the hill. And as soon as I entered the room, I was overcome by the silence there. There was kind of a presence there, a stillness, a peace that was kind of unforgettable for me. And I never kind of walked into a space, a place, and suddenly were hit by this kind of very powerful peace and silence. And I arranged it so that I would be the last person in the tour to leave the room and kind of lingered behind as long as I could to soak it up. Once I went to Nepal and was going to, I was going to say the Vipassana retreat in Nepal. But I had some extra time. And on the way to Asia, in the airport in Seoul, some American had come over to me. I was shaved head and kind of a Buddhist monk. And he came over and said, "Oh," I had no plans when I met him to go to Nepal, but then he said, "Oh, if you ever go to Kathmandu, look up this this Tibetan monk, he speaks English. And so I somehow interpreted that to mean that this was like just an ordinary monk. And I had this address. So then it turned out I happened to go to Kathmandu for this retreat. I had the time, so I went to see this monk. And no one in the monastery spoke English, so I showed them the address and the name. He goes, oh, upstairs, go up the stairs. I went up the stairs and came to this floor, and down right there. And there was a small little room, like a little monastic room cell. And so I just kind of knocked on the door, and he invited me in. I walked in, sat down in his chair. He was laying in his bed. And we had a wonderful talk for a while. And then all these disciples, especially Western disciples, started showing up at the door, getting down on their knees and crawling in on their knees. And I realized, oh, this isn't an ordinary monk. And he was the abbot of the monastery, it turned out, and very highly revered. And I was sitting there chatting with him. But I started asking him questions about Buddhism, and finally he said, oh, you have to go see His Holiness. And he pointed out the windows. Go down there, that building down there, the monastery over there. And he said, Holiness. I didn't know who the Holiness was, or who he was, anything. So, okay, I'll go see him. And since, you know, ask these questions, or kind of, or something. And so I went to see Kenzei Rinpoche, now dead, but one of the great Tibetan teachers. And it took a while to get an audience. He was doing some kind of teaching for the Tibetans, and it took a while, and I got to go and come back. And so by the end of the day, I could go and see him. And I was ushered into this, kind of, it looked like, to me, as far as I could tell, kind of a closet. You know, that with these, there was kind of a platform, and there were like three or four of these Tibetan teachers up on this platform in the closet. And they were somehow talking through the closet into the room where people were listening. So I had to kind of get into this big closet, on my knees and bow to him. And as soon as I did that, I was in his presence. There was a silence again. And presence with him in that room, with him, that again was very palpable and very powerful for me. And all I wanted to do was just soak it up, take it in, to kind of sense it. And they asked me, do you have a question? And I wasn't ready for a question. I was just ready then to just take this in. So I just, you know, and then they ushered me out. And I lost that opportunity to ask a question, but I was so kind of taken by the silence, by the presence that was there, the stillness. And then one more story from my life of the first time I spent a lot of time alone. I spent a week alone on a farm, a small dairy farm, and the farmer and his wife left, and I was supposed to take care of the farm for the week. And I was about 21, I think, 20, 21. And I never spent time alone. There was no one came to the farm. In the distance, you know, I could see the postman kind of walking up the road sometimes, but otherwise no one came. And it was this really marvelous time. As the days went along, my mind got clearer and clearer and clearer and stiller and stiller and stiller. And everything kind of, everything around me started to sparkle, you know, like somehow they'd clean my eyes. And it was just, you know, everything kind of stood out in the highlight. And my mind didn't stop thinking, but the thinking got really thin, but also at the same time very clear. And I felt this great intimacy with myself. And I realized how much the social conversation, talking to people and keeping that kind of social thing going, kept the mind somewhat agitated and preoccupied. And having this all fall away just kind of brought this kind of clarity and cleansiness, this purity to the mind. And so after that time of being alone, when my friends came back, then that clarity and that stillness that I felt, silence, kind of vanished pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But I realized that something very important had happened to me. And so it became my quest, my question then after that, was how can I be alone with others? I didn't think I should just go be a hermit. That somehow didn't seem to be in the cards. But something somehow that way of being alone, with that stillness and peace and intimacy, could be there while I'm with people in a rich way, kind of not just aloof from people, but involved in, you know, in a rich way with our world. that became for many years my quest, my kind of my spiritual question. How can I have this sense in community? I once read someone who said, if you want to have a spiritual life, one of the ways to do that is to go to bed early and get up early. That was it. It's that easy. Now I don't know what time you guys get up, but I mean, I think she meant early. I spend a lot of my life getting up early, real early. I love it. And there's something about, the stillness and the silence of, around before the day begins, before people start moving around and life happens, stuff happens, that calls forth, at least for me, a kind of intimacy, a kind of presence, a kind of stillness, a kind of peace, a kind of perspective on my life that's very different once I kind of get caught up in all the things that have to be done. And I think some of it has to do with the silence of that time, the stillness of that time. And so rather than thinking that spiritual practice is something you have to do, which it can be, it is a very important part of it, it's some situations, it's what happens to us. We kind of avail ourselves, we're receptive, make ourselves receptive to something that's here. And one of those times that it can be felt very, very, for some people, very tangibly almost, is in the very early hours. Just get up early and sit and have tea, look out the window in the dark or the stars, or just kind of be there. If you do, let that soak that in, and see what happens. One of the things that happens is it's kind of meditative. You become very aware of probably your thoughts and your feelings. One of the reasons some people don't like to have silence is because they have to become aware of their thoughts and their feelings. Right? Busy. Let's keep it busy so you don't have to see these things and be just, But I would suggest that it's actually very valuable to stop and see that stuff and really see what drives us and what makes us tick and see that. Because if we see it clearly and stop for it and hold it in the silence, it allows it to unwind dissolve, or something happens. It allows us to see it in a deeper way. And that depth adds depth to us. But also it gives a chance, perhaps, of us to realize there's another game in town. There isn't only the content of our thinking. There's not only the content of our emotions, what we're feeling, but there's the awareness of it, or the stillness that holds it, the silence that's kind of bigger than it, that's there as well. And so it's kind of like realizing that there's more to your life than what you usually think it's about. Life isn't what you think, and there's something more to it. And that stillness is kind of stillness which doesn't require us to solve our life, but puts our life, our thoughts and ideas in a different perspective. And there are a few precious times in life when we kind of somehow get this kind of broader, more spacious view of things, stillness or silence, that kind of everything seems okay, even when it's extreme, when it's strong, everything's okay. Spiritual people sometimes talk about sensing or feeling that everything's perfect just the way it is, even though I feel lousy. Or even though, there are things that shouldn't be happening that are happening. It isn't that we condone them or accept them or, but there's a kind of feeling that this silence, this stillness, spaciousness gives, that gives us a different context. One Zen teacher said that when you really feel the silence that's always here, you begin experiencing life, seeing life through the eyes of a Buddha. So something about the silence. Some of you might know that the name for the Buddha, one of the names, is Shakyamuni. And it's really a title. And he comes from the Shakya clan, so he's the Muni of the Shakyas. And Muni is a Sanskrit word for a sage. But it comes originally from a Sanskrit root meaning silence. And it partly was used for sage because it was a tradition in ancient times for sages to take vows of silence. And so it became extended to all kinds of sages, not just the silent ones. But the word Muni has its root in being silent. So the Buddha was the silent one of the Shakya clan. Probably many of you are familiar with the famous quote of Mozart, where someone asked him, what's the most important part of your music? And he said, the pauses. And some of you are familiar of kind of Zen, maybe Zen poetry, kind of these little, the short little Japanese Zen poems where they kind of highlight silence by showing that silence highlights the sound of the bell. You know, that this is the, or there's a great emptiness on the scroll, and there's just this little picture of a bamboo or something, and you know, rather than filling the scroll with painting, the emptiness kind of highlights the simplicity of the bamboo or the, you know, flower arrangement. You know, Japanese flower arrangement, where there's just one flower that's, you know, rather than kind of form of flower arrangement, but just bursting full, you know, with abundance. Just one that really highlights something. Silence can highlight so much from our lives. And so to give our chance to have silence and appreciate it, I think is very, very useful and very helpful. In some ways, if you can cultivate enough silence, half the work of meditation is done for you. Now, when you sit down to meditate, you'll find that one of the challenges is keeping silent. Because then the silence maybe is not the silence around you, which it's possible to tune into, and it's possible it's very, can be very helpful to tune into it and help still the mind. But when you sit down to meditate, you become aware of how much chatter there is in the mind. And sometimes I've meditated and just kind of wanted to say to myself, shut up. And it's amazing. And of course, you know, it's, if we kept a tally of the kind of things we're thinking about, I wonder how much, what percentage of it is profound. And so, you know, this, you know, so we get caught up in the content of our thoughts. There's a, what in Buddhism is called noble silence, and noble silence in the teachings of the Buddha refers to a stillness or silence in the mind when the normal discursive activity of the mind has settled down. And it's really, that's another really precious thing, is when discursiveness of the mind quiets and we have an inner stillness or inner silence that begins to kind of show itself. It doesn't necessarily mean that all thinking has stopped, but our involvement, our caught-upness in discursive thoughts and trying to figure things out and plan the day and remember the past and this and that with our thoughts, kind of just kind of thins out, quiets down, you know. And we realize that there's space or silence or stillness in the mind as well. Some teachers give the instruction that when the mind gets a little bit still in meditation, look for the space or the silence between your thoughts. Now, most people maybe have a hard time finding that because it's just a very continuous stream. But I suspect occasionally there's a period at the end of a sentence in your thinking, or is it just a run-on sentence in your mind? You know, in that little period or a comma, you know, there might be, you know, there can be gaps, you know, and especially meditators can feel that when the mind gets quiet and still. And to look for that and kind of enter into or kind of sense or feel the silence that's between your thoughts, or the stillness and the silence that's behind your thoughts. Sometimes in meditation, you can get a sense when the mind is quiet that there's a tremendous field of stillness or silence, and thoughts kind of arising like bubbles up out of it. And you realize there's something much more than the content of thinking. I think if there's a Hindu tradition or a Hindu teacher who once said that all creativity, all beautiful things that get created arise out of silence. And I've certainly found that when I can have some degree of silence and stillness, that my mind also becomes very full. And rather than diminishing myself and feeling like I'm less than, or that I'm losing something by the silence, there's a way, and actually this depth and fullness and something very rich begins happening. And that richness that's available, I can tell you, I can watch my mind, and sometimes I can see when I'm caught up in the discursive surface chatter of my mind, to that place that has this surface chatter, it seems like the surface chatter is really important. Or it seems like it's important to be engaged in it, or, you know, why should I give it up? But if I can kind of drop below it and sense something deeper, it's really rich. And so my suggestion is that silence is a place that gives birth to a richness, richness and a fullness to who we are. And then when we're ready to speak, we can speak from that place, speak from some place of deeper motivation than we can if we're just kind of riding the surface chatter of our life. It lacks the kind of excitement that can come with always doing and doing and getting and having and kind of being in conversation. You know, it's wonderful conversations you can have and wonderful energetic ways of being in the world. And I don't want to knock that. I think I love it, that as well. But sometimes we can be addicted to that and not be willing to let go of it, always kind of looking for one more hit. And I think to some degree, some people live on psychic caffeine. You know, where they're always doing and engaging and activating and feeding the kind of the mind with their, and just kind of keeps them up and going. And part of the process of meditation, I think, is getting decaffeinated. And you do that, it takes a while. There's a withdrawal you have to go through. And then once you get through the withdrawal phase, then you can begin discovering some natural state, perhaps, just like you would when you stop drinking coffee, maybe. So, now I have a question for you. You've heard my thoughts about silence. Mm-hmm. And now I have a question for you guys. Those of you who care to say something. What are some of the beautiful things that you have touched through silence, with the help of silence? What are some of the beautiful things that you've been in touch with? Ruth, in the back, can you pass?
I remember once, several years ago, it was fall and it was kind of cloudy and feeling very wintry. And for some reason, I went outside and I felt the silence, and this tree that was there was really... it had some presence to it. It wasn't like it was really beautiful or anything, but because it was reflecting the same wintry mood, but it was still in the silence.
Great, thank you. Smita, in the back there, Ruth, you can pass it.
Recently, somebody silent has come into my life. One of our neighbors' pet bunny escaped and was caught a few times and returned, but escaped again. So it's hanging around my yard. So I decided it probably wants to be free at this point, and I feed it, turns out to be a she, and I feed her a canna today, and she lets me pet her a little bit. And think about a rabbit. I never had a pet in my life, apart from my daughter, who was never very silent. She's sort of doing that now. But so it's the funny thing about a rabbit and like a bird or a cat or a dog is that it's silent. And so it's all about just watching each other and just very gingerly maybe getting a little tactile touch, but there is no speech, and I just feel it leaves a lot of space for my heart to just look at her and just be filled with love because there is a space left. There's no sound.
Nice. So in some ways what you said reminded me that you know, when I've done meditation retreats, they're done in silence. But sometimes you're sitting next to someone you don't know, perhaps. You haven't met them before. You don't even know their name, perhaps. But they're sitting next to you for a week in silence. And sometimes at the end of the week, I feel like I know them really well. There's a kind of a depth of familiarity, of knowing them and connection, that probably is, in some way, is probably deeper than if we spent the week talking. And you know, it's a bit different. I don't want to use like orange and apples, perhaps, the comparison. But it's quite something, quite amazing. I fall in love with people in the silence of just sitting next to them. Kind of something happens there.
I recently accompanied my ex on his dying journey. And when I was with him in the hospital, when he was awake, we were kind of busy chatting and talking and knowing that there was our past experience and a lot of love in the background. But when he became unconscious and didn't wake up anymore, and I sat by him for 20 hours in silence, it was so easy for the love to just kind of be there with the breath.
Yes.
Very different than when we were talking.
Imagine what it would have been like if you could have had the silence when he was still awake. Sometimes it's very profound what happens when we're just silent together with people, if we allow it. If we're comfortable with silence. A lot of people are uncomfortable with silence, but then we lose an opportunity. When we, maybe I've told this story to many of you before, but when we bought the church here, before we bought it, there were all these pews here. And I met the ministers who were selling it for the first time, and it was just me and the two of them. They gave me a tour of the building, it took 10, 15 minutes or something to walk around and talk about the building. And as we went along this little tour, there were more and more gaps in the conversation, you know, longer periods of silence. And so finally we came back and we sat in the front pews that were up here. And then we sat down and then we had one of these gaps of silence. And it continued for about 15 minutes. And that's when I felt I really connected to them. It was just really like I felt there was something, we were really sharing something very significant. And then some of our people came to do the rest of the, our community came to see it. And so then I went over to one of the ministers and said, we got up and talk to them. And then I went over to one of the ministers and said, someday we'll have to pick up where we left off. So thank you. There's someone else. What's something beautiful you've touched in silence?
On Saturday, I was on a ridge in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and it was storming pretty bad up there, but it was at a time where it wasn't raining very hard, and I remember just keeping a gaze on the horizon, and just seeing, as I was just still and being quiet and still, just seeing the movement of the clouds, and then noticing that, and feeling and noticing the grass in front of me. I was about the grass level and seeing that move, and then seeing the trees and just seeing all the movement happen, and then feeling the connection, but I couldn't see it, that the same thing that was moving, the energy that was moving the grass and the trees in front of me was moving the clouds, and just kind of being with that and just feeling it move. And I kind of thought of the, that empty space that I couldn't see is silence, but I guess just that's just what it was, just feeling the connection through the flow of the clouds and the vegetation in front of me.
That's beautiful.
Sometimes when I play tennis, like in the morning, if I'm just playing with one other person and there's no one on the surrounding courts, it's so quiet. And you can just hear the bounce of the ball, or you know, hear when it hit the ball. But it's kind of like an active silence, you know. And whenever I'm able to be in an active silence, I play a lot better, and I have more fun playing.
Great, thank you. Here in the back.
I was in Connecticut, and as a hospice nurse, driving to a patient's house in some remote town that I hadn't been to before. And I was a little bit lost. I was running late, didn't have a cell phone at the time. And out of the woods, a woman came, and she was crying. And I thought, drive on, no, stop. And I stopped, got out of the car, and I went up to this woman, and we hugged. And she didn't speak English. And we just cried together. And then she turned around and went back into the woods. There's a house way back there, and she just went her way. I went back into the car, and it was so profound that we had experienced each other's essence, and it was like angels coming together.
Mm. Yeah. What is it to be comfortable with silence? Or what is it to take the opportunity of silence to experience richness there? That's on the other side of maybe impatience or boredom. So anybody else like to speak? So for those of you who've been huffing and puffing in your spiritual life, straining and striving, trying to do your utmost to be a good, diligent practitioner and counting your breaths and doing loving kindness practice and frustrations and reading sutras and, you know, going to sitting groups and just kind of exhausting yourself with your spiritual practice, maybe you could just stop it all. Go to bed early and get up early. So, thank you very much.